His skin was turning slightly yellow, and the area around the puncture was already purple. Dark red blood seeped down his torso onto the top of his jeans. I swallowed, trying not to vomit.
You all think you're so much better than me. You think you can get away with fucking my life up, and you!
Phillips turned his chin toward my brother as Kale slammed him against the wall.
I'm going to fucking kill you. I don't have anything to lose now, he threatened.
My brother lunged at him before Mendoza or I could stop him. The room was spinning. I felt like I was having an out-of-body experience. Things like this didn't happen in reality. Blood and death threats were only on the screen. Mendoza grabbed me by the shoulders, holding me back from trying to get my brother.
Go, fucking go,
he said in my ear.
Martin or your brother will get killed if you don't go.
I froze at his warning, knowing he wouldn't say that if he didn't believe it. But as my feet carried me toward the door, I heard Kale groan in pain. Whipping my head around, I tried to keep up with what was playing out in front of me, and was suddenly back in Mendoza's backyard, Phillips standing there with a gun in his shaking hands.
Put it down,
Kale warned him, a trickle of blood running down the side of his mouth. Phillips must have hit him with the weapon.
Put my gun down,
he said again, this time slowly.
Fuck all of you. You've all been planning this. You wanted me to fuck up and get locked away so you can steal my wife and my baby. My whole life.
He began to sob. I could see his mind splitting in front of my eyes. Paranoia and pain were driving this man into madness, and with each second that passed, I could see the humanity leaving him. It was terrifying, and I couldn't move. Were we all going to die? Just like that. I had never feared for my life until now, and it was shockingly not as terrifying as I always thought it would be. The last time Phillips did this, I was so shocked that I couldn't even consider it. But now, as Phillips turned his gun on me and Kale shoved my brother away from him, I wondered what the news would say. What my dad would feel. If my mother would see our faces on the news and wish she would have come back. I thought of Kale's mother and sister. The two of them never seeing him again. That drove me up. Toward Phillips. Kale screamed my name, and everything shifted. Phillips turned the gun on my brother, and I moved toward him. The bullet was fast, but so was Mendoza, who dropped to the floor as my brother screamed. Chapter 26. Karina. The room was completely red. Blood everywhere, coming from the corners of the hospital wall, dripping down the wall art and all over the beeping machines. I startled awake, cupping my mouth to keep from screaming. My brother wasn't asleep, but he didn't move, just stared blankly at the wall behind me. So much had changed in one day. Austin would be fine. The doctor stitched him up like a doll, and the psychiatrists kept giving him something in his IV bag every few hours to calm him down. Elodie nearly went into labor from the stress of what had happened, and was now waiting on her parents to arrive from France. And worst of all, Mendoza was in his third surgery within 24 hours. He was breathing, that much I knew, but we'd had no other news. I tried to call Gloria, but her phone kept going to voicemail without ringing. I looked at my brother, propped up and beyond distraught. If Mendoza died, my brother would not survive it. Do you need anything? I asked him, my voice cracking. My throat burned. I couldn't remember the last time I'd had a drink of water. Austin shook his head but didn't look at me. His eyes were bloodshot, and his entire face and all his visible skin was a bluish tone. Are you hungry? He ignored me. Austin, I began, but his eyes snapped to mine, startling me.
Stop, Care. Please, for the love of God, just stop.
His words hit me right in the stomach. I could feel how much he meant them, how he was refraining from saying something harsher. "I'm sorry. I'm just trying to help," I explained, my eyes prickling with tears. He let out a sigh and looked back at the wall.
"Can you go, please?"
I grabbed my purse and keys. My need to be there for him was so strong it was making me sick, but this wasn't about me. He had been through hell and didn't know what was going to happen to the person he loved the most. I left the room quietly and didn't turn around as I heard my brother begin to sob loudly. The sound haunted me as I walked down the hall, hoping to see Kale or Elodie or anyone. I felt lost and useless, like somehow all of this was my fault. My brain was so scrambled that I couldn't decipher if that was a rational thought or not. But as soon as I saw Gloria, I realized I was right. She rushed toward me, an unreadable look on her face. When she raised her hand, I thought she was going to hug me, but her palm slapped my cheek, knocking me to the floor. I managed to get to my feet, holding my face in shock as she screamed at me. Black mascara lined her cheeks, and her eyes were swollen, nearly shut from crying. "This is your fault! If you hadn't shown up there, and if your brother could have kept his dick in his pants, none of this would have happened. My husband, the father of my children's life, is ruined all because of your family again," she shouted, her mouth twisting. "He's never going to walk again, and it's all your family's fault," she screamed, her hand again flying toward me. I couldn't move. But before she hit me, someone grabbed her arm from behind. Kale. He gripped her arm and pulled her to turn her away from me. She kept cursing at me, each sentence worse than the last. "Get her out of here! How dare you fucking be here!" she yelled, twisting in Kale's arms.
"It's okay. It's okay,"
he said calmly. Kale squeezed her into a hug, and she thrashed harder.
"If I get my hands on her, it's fucking over!" Gloria screamed.
The look in her eyes as Kale dragged her away from me and down the hall was heartbreaking. She hated me, and I couldn't blame her. I made my way out of the hospital. No one came after me. Why would they? Step after step, I felt like a robot, unable to coordinate my moves, tripping over my feet, but somehow able to keep going. I made it to the parking lot and realized I didn't know how I had even gotten here. Not just to the lot, but the hospital. I grabbed my keys and pressed the unlock button to find my car. Not a sound. I tried my damnedest to remember how I'd gotten here. Kale's truck was there, and I moved toward it. I didn't have a key, but even sitting by it would give me some sort of grounding. As soon as I made it there, I heard my father's familiar voice calling my name. I was so lightheaded that I couldn't tell if it was him. I ran my hands over my chest and torso to make sure I was awake. His arms wrapped around me, and I closed my eyes, a dizzying feeling rushing over me like waves. I could hear myself vomiting, but didn't feel anything as my body lurched and lurched. When I woke up, I was in my old room. There was a candle burning and a space heater next to the bed. A tray of food was on the dresser next to my bed, untouched. My eyes felt heavy, and it took me a few seconds to remember why I was so out of it. I sat up too quickly, heaving as my head spun. Estelle was there suddenly, holding a small trash can. She put it under me as I attempted to vomit. My body was empty, so nothing came out, but I couldn't stop gagging. She gently rubbed my back, making comforting noises as she caressed me. Eventually, I stopped, and she brought a glass of water to my mouth. My lips cracked as I tried to refuse, and I tasted the blood as it entered my mouth. The smell shot me straight back to Kale's living room, back to Austin's screams and Kale's calls for help. My mind, playing through what happened, was like treading through a pool of thick mud. "Sorry," I coughed as the water came back up as soon as I tried to swallow it. She smiled, soft and sad. Try to drink a little more if you can. Her dark hair was pulled into a low ponytail away from her face. Her face was bare and shiny, and she wasn't wearing any jewelry, not even earrings. I wasn't used to seeing her so naturally. She was wearing sweats, which I was surprised she even owned a pair of. I looked around, piecing together that she was in my room, taking care of me. I didn't know how to react to that. I took a few sips of the water she was offering and managed not to cough. The bedspread was different from my old one, and a dark, heavy blanket covered my body. I touched it with my fingertips. It was heated. "You've been so cold since you got here," so I plugged in the heated blanket. "If it's too hot, let me know," she offered softly. The subtle dimple in her cheek was made more prevalent by her nervous expression. "Thank you. Where is my brother?" I asked, closing my eyes and putting my head back on the pillow. "He's still at the hospital. They'll keep him one more night to be sure."
"And Mendoza? Do you know anything about his condition?"
I didn't think she would, but I had to ask.
"He's..."
Estelle's voice sounded like the words were being squeezed out one by one.
"He's alive, but as of now, he's paralyzed."
I shot up, ignoring the screaming pain in my head.
"What?"
What Gloria had screamed at me made sense now. He would never walk again. Oh my God.
"It might change. It's too soon to call it."
"Oh my God!" was all I managed to cry out. Estelle brought her hand to my forehead, then to my cheeks, wiping away my tears. It shook me to the core that in one split second, with one decision made by one person, everything had changed. Mendoza had saved my brother's life, but the idea of him never being able to play with his children, never being able to pick Gloria up and hug her? I got sick again. I watched Estelle crush a pill and put it into my water, but I didn't decline it. I would drink or take whatever she was offering if it made all of this hurt less. I needed to feel less. "And Cale? Has he called or anything?" I was full of shame as I asked. He had way more important stuff to worry about than me right now. His best friend had been shot by someone they'd both trusted, and now one of them was paralyzed. The weight of it all was too much to bear. I couldn't begin to imagine how Cale felt. I moved to take the blanket from my body, to look for and grab my phone, but whatever magical potion Estelle had given me was already kicking in. I felt woozy, then tired, then darkness covered my eyes and my mind as I fell into sleep.
Chapter 27, Cale. "You need to eat." I slid a bag of takeout burgers and fries toward Gloria. She glared at me and pushed them back. "What good is it for your kids if you starve to death and both of their parents are fucked up?" "Fuck you," she growled. The kids were at Gloria's parents in Arizona for now, but they wouldn't be there forever, and it was partly my responsibility to make sure their mother took care of herself while their father held on to his life. "Please eat something and I'll leave you alone," I told her, pushing the brown bag across the small plastic hospital table again. "I doubt that." But she opened the top of the bag, pulled out a burger, and unwrapped it. The smell made my stomach growl. "Eat some. You ordered enough for the whole platoon. Eat." She handed me a paper-wrapped burger and I didn't argue. I'd had a few protein shakes in the last few days, but hadn't had a solid meal. "Did you see Karina yet?" Gloria asked, taking a big bite. I shook my head. "I went to her dad's place, but she was passed out." "I can't believe what I said to her," Gloria hung her head. "I wasn't in my right mind." Gloria hadn't meant what she'd said to Karina, and she was going through hell. But Karina was so sensitive, and she valued Gloria's friendship so much. There'd been nothing but heartbreak on Karina's already devastated face as Gloria had slapped her. "You can apologize when you see her," I reminded her. She pushed her long dark hair behind her shoulders with her fingers. That won't undo what I said and did. It's not her fault or Fisher's. It's no one's fault except Phillips's and my dumbass wannabe hero husband, you know? She slid her elbows across the small table and laid her head down. I hope Karina wouldn't take it personally, but it would have been impossible not to. Karina was probably still in shock. I would never forgive myself for failing to keep her out of that situation, and it was my fault for allowing Phillips into my place at all that day. I shouldn't have trusted that he would have changed his perspective so quickly. Then again, I hadn't realized Fisher would go walking into the lion's den so soon. If it was anyone's fault, it was mine. My head was throbbing and my eyes burned like they hadn't been closed in days, which was true. And my chest felt like it had a hole in it, as if I were the one who'd been shot. We can't undo anything that happened. We have to live with it, all of it. What we did, what we didn't do, it's ours to bear. All we can do is try to do better from now on. How philosophical? She rolled her eyes, a fry hanging out of the corner of her mouth. I don't know what the future looks like anymore, she quietly admitted. If he will never be able to walk again, what does that even mean? For him? For our babies? I wish I knew the answer. Deep down, I was terrified of what it meant. Mendoza was so lively, so young and full of passion. All of that being contained, him unable to move for the rest of his life, was absolutely fucking terrifying. I would carry the guilt of not being able to stop Phillips for the rest of my life. Every time I looked at Mendoza, Gloria, or their children, the weight of what had happened would push against my chest, twist my insides, and make me wish it had been me who'd been injured. It means life fucking sucks sometimes. It means everything is going to be even harder from now on. It means the life you knew was gone. I couldn't keep my honesty at bay, even if it was too harsh for the moment. Gloria wouldn't want someone to bullshit her and tell her that everything would be fine, because it wouldn't be. We didn't talk much as we both inhaled enough food for four people. I could taste the blood from my busted lip every time I took a bite. I was sure it was bruised, but didn't have the capacity to care enough to look in a mirror. A little bit of color came back to her cheeks as she finished eating. The beeping monitor made her twitch every time it went off. The physical and mental exhaustion was all-encompassing on her small frame. Why don't you go home and sleep a bit? I'll stay here in case he wakes up, I offered, half expecting her to cuss me out. She looked at her husband lying in the bed and then back at me. I think I will. He's still out, and now that I'm full, I don't know how much longer I can keep my eyes open. She leaned over Mendoza's still body and kissed his forehead, running her long fingernails over his slightly grown-out hair. He didn't move a muscle as she left the room, whispering a thank you to me on her way out. When the room was silent with only Mendoza and me and our mistakes, I began to speak to him. Manny, we've really done it now. I can't believe you took a bullet for Fisher, you fucking idiot. I was conflicted on whether that had been a noble or a dumbass thing to do. If Karina's brother had been shot and paralyzed or dead, her entire world would have changed. She would have never been the same again. But Mendoza had a wife and children, a career in the army. Just because I loved Karina didn't mean her brother's life held more value than those of my closest friends. I wish I would have stopped it. I never meant for it to get this bad. Phillips came to me, saying he was going to leave them alone and not do anything stupid, but fuck. Now you're lying in the hospital. God damn it. None of this is fair. His voice scared the shit out of me as he replied.
Life isn't fair.
His eyes were barely open, but his mouth twitched into a small smile. I wanted to punch him for smiling at a time like this, though I wasn't surprised. He always had a way of making a joke out of the worst possible situations. Do you want me to call the nurse? I asked, not sure if that was what I was supposed to do now that he'd woken up.
No. I don't want to be poked and prodded right now. Where's Gloria?
I nodded, knowing I would want some peace too if I were him. She went home to sleep. She hasn't slept since you got here. He closed his eyes softly, like it took a lot of effort to keep them open.
How long has it been? Feels like a goddamn month.
Only 2 months, I fucked with him. He cocked one eye open and shook his head back and forth.
If I could move my arm, I would be giving you the finger. But they've got me so doped up right now, I can't move shit.
Glad to see your personality isn't gone.
Just my nerves from the waist down.
He was joking, but the reality hit me hard. I found myself blinking away tears, but did my best to keep it light for his sake.
How's Fisher?
He asked, his voice dry and raspy. Better shape than you, but he's here too. The screwdriver really did a number on him.
Where's Phillips, that motherfucker?
Mendoza began to cough and I jumped up to his side. I should call the nurse. At least drink some water. I held the carafe to his chapped lips. He downed more than I'd expected him to.
Where is Phillips? Did they lock him up?
I didn't know how to respond to that. No, they can't find him. Mendoza tried to sit up but failed. The movement killed me. I had never believed in miracles or praying, but I found myself talking to the unknown, begging for all of this to be undone, for Mendoza's life to not be this way forever.
They can't find him?
He repeated, refusing to accept that. They will. They just haven't yet. I should have been surprised that the justice system and the MPs had failed us, but sure as hell wasn't. I would chase that man to the end of the earth if they didn't find him within the week. He could come back at any time to finish what he'd started.
And Karina, how is she?
Mendoza inquired. Not sure. She's in better shape than you, physically at least. I'm going back to her dad's after I leave here. She's been staying there the last 2 days. Both of us turned our attention to the door as Fisher limped in, holding his side with both of his hands. What the hell are you doing up? I scolded him, moving to help him walk. I could hear you two from next door and wanted in on the fun. He half smiled, and if he didn't have a literal hole in his body, I would have elbowed him. You crazy fucker, why did you do that? Fisher sat down on the edge of Mendoza's bed. You could have died.
You almost died.
Mendoza responded simply like they were talking about picking bread up from the fucking commissary. I can't believe you, Fisher groaned. You crazy bastard stepping in front of a bullet for me. An actual bullet.
I'd do it again.
Mendoza's voice was clear, dead serious. You bastard. Fisher leaned in a little to try to hug Mendoza but winced in pain when he bent his torso. Thank you, but you should not have done that. You have a family. Fisher began to cry, and Mendoza's fingers twitched, trying to reach for him, but he couldn't.
I told you I had your back. I'd take a bullet for both of you any day. My life has been over for a while now. Yours are just beginning.
He whispered, growing tired from talking as soon as he woke up. The idea that Mendoza believed his life was over already was devastating enough, and amplified the fact that so much had been taken from him, again and again. I could see the dark edges of my mind creeping in, remembering cold, sleepless nights in the desert, recalling the faces of the innocent people Mendoza would never forget killing. He wasn't to blame for what had happened in Afghanistan. It had been an accident. But that didn't make it any better. His alcoholism spoke for itself. I pushed the shadows back, unsure how much longer I would be able to do so. No more bullets, Fisher begged, wiping his wet cheeks. In another reality, this scene would have been funny. The irony of this entire situation being so damn heavy, but all of us trying to find the humor in the darkness.
Are you still going to be able to enlist?
Mendoza asked. No clue. Fisher rubbed his chin, his blue eyes full of worry. Let's worry about that later. You both need to rest and recover so you can go home, I told them. I don't have a home, and no offense, I never want to go to your place again, Fisher confessed, rightfully so.
How's Al?
Mendoza asked Fisher. I don't know. She hasn't been here. Fisher's eyes met the floor. I'm sure it's because she doesn't want Phillips to come here, since he's still running loose for now, I reminded him. My sister is in bad shape, too, he added, looking back up at me. I'll worry about your sister. You worry about yourself and Elodie. And you, I gestured at Mendoza, you worry about yourself only. Your good deeds are done for the year. Got it?
Got it.
He saluted me and the three of us laughed. Even in this completely fucked up situation, wounded and unsure of what was coming next, we managed to laugh.
You're not supposed to be in here.
A nurse walked into the room, a look of disapproval on her round face. Fisher turned on his charm and flashed a big flirty smile at her. And of course it worked.
I had to check on my friend. He almost died for me. The least I could do was crawl over here.
That's sweet and all, but you need to get back to your bed before I get in trouble for losing my patient. And there's someone here to see you.
The nurse checked the watch on her wrist and scanned the three of us with her gaze.
You have 2 minutes. I'll tell your visitor you'll be back then.
Is it a young woman with light brown hair? I asked the nurse, wondering if it was Karina, but hoping to God she was still in bed at their father's house. The nurse shook her head.
No. She says she's his mother.
Chapter 28. Karina. The bedroom was dark except for the little blue light on the humidifier perched on the nightstand. Estelle had really gone all out in her role as my nurse and caretaker. A humidifier, candles, a heated blanket, a fresh tray of food. My mind was still a bit foggy as I pushed myself up to sitting. I rolled my neck in circles, trying to relieve a bit of the ache from lying down for so long. I couldn't find my phone without any light, and panic settled in, growing by the second as I moved the heavy blankets around. Are you okay? Estelle entered the room, flicking on the light. She turned the dimmer down as I covered my face from the shocking light. Her outfit was different from the last time I saw her, but still extremely casual compared to what I was used to seeing her wear. Do you know where my phone is? I asked as she got closer. In the drawer. She pulled the top drawer of the nightstand closest to me open and handed me my phone. The power was off, which gave me even more anxiety. As the phone turned on, notifications came through. A few texts from Elodie asking how and where I was. Gloria's name popped up, and I held my breath. I would never forget the way she'd looked at me, full of hatred. My heart was broken, but I couldn't feel sorry for myself because she was right. If I hadn't gone to Kale's, none of this would have happened. Pushing through my fear and pain, I clicked on her name and read the message. I'm so sorry for what I said. We should talk in person, and please try not to take what I said to heart. I didn't mean it. I took my anger out on you, and I'm so sorry. Reading her message filled me with two types of emotions. On the one hand, I was relieved and felt like I could breathe again. But on the other, I felt undeserving of her forgiveness. When tragedy happened, it was much easier for everyone involved to have a clear villain, and I was more than willing to take on that role for the sake of those around me. Especially Gloria, who had been so welcoming and kind to me from the beginning. Her life would never be the same now. I stared at my phone, unsure how to respond, and decided to wait until my thoughts were clearer and I could give her a better reply. I looked up at Estelle, who was standing over me, her brows pushed together in worry. I know you probably don't feel like it, but can you please try and eat some crackers or the broth? You'll get sick again if you don't. Her request came softly, borderline maternal. Instead of being snotty to her, I agreed and reached for the tray of food. She beat me to it, grabbing it and setting it on my lap. Kale came by, she told me as I took a sip of broth. I almost spit it out. When? A few hours ago. You were asleep, so he said he would come back. I wanted to vent to her about how selfish I felt, how I knew that I was suffering the least out of everyone, and that I felt like a freaking idiot for feeling so defeated, so exhausted, so afraid. I wasn't the one whose husband wasn't going to walk again. I wasn't the one who had an actual screwdriver sticking out of them. I wasn't the one whose husband had caused all of this and was now nowhere to be found. I was just a stupid girl who'd thrown herself into the middle of the fire and was now being babied by her stepmom. I need to get up, I told Estelle after finishing the broth. I can't just lie here anymore. I need to shower and... I don't know, but I need to do something. She didn't try to persuade me. She grabbed the tray and moved it, then pulled the covers off me and turned the light all the way up. My bones ached as I stood up, and my head was tender from Phillips's grip on my hair. I patted the spot to see if he had ripped any out, but it didn't feel like he had. When I got out of the shower, there were brand new clothes waiting on the bed for me. Cotton pants and a thick sweater, both pale green and as soft as fur. Estelle ignored no detail, so there were also panties and a bralette tucked under the outfit. Even a pair of new socks to match. I brushed my hair into a tight bun at the nape of my neck and pinched some temporary color back into my cheeks before I made my way downstairs. My father was sitting at the table, his phone to his ear.
You have 2 hours to find him. Whoever finds him first will be heavily rewarded, and whoever doesn't will be equally punished,
he threatened. I knew who he was talking about. So there was no need to ask.
You're up,
he stated, looking me up and down from head to toe. I'm up, I repeated.
We're going to find him. I have my best scouts looking for him. He won't touch you, any of you, again,
he promised. Thanks. I didn't have the energy to grill my dad over his involvement or why he would bother helping any of us.
I never meant for this to happen, Care. If I'd known how unstable he was, I would have never requested orders to bring him back.
I didn't think my heart could sink any lower, but it did. I should have expected my father to somehow be tied to this tragedy. I gripped the back of the dining room chair to keep me upright. What do you mean? You brought him back?
I did not know about your brother and Elodie's involvement. I thought I was doing the right thing, but evidently I couldn't have been more wrong. I never imagined this would be the outcome.
Something in my father's tone made me believe him for once.
I'm going to do everything in my power to see to it that Mendoza gets the top care this post can offer. And if that's not enough, I'll send him up to Walter Reed in Maryland,
my dad promised. Maybe it was the concoction that Estelle had given me, or my desperation for something good to happen, but I chose to believe him and find comfort in the fact that he was finally going to use his power for good.
Your brother will also be fine, and Elodie can file for an emergency divorce given the circumstances. Her parents are arriving any minute. I sent a driver to pick them up from the airport.
Why are you doing all this? I asked. I didn't want to get involved in a trade-off with my father. Him doing something good and expecting something from me or Kale or any of us. My father pressed his palms gently on the table.
I never wanted to be the villain in your story, Karina. I know I have done many, many wrongs in my life, to you and to my soldiers, but while I have time, I want to spend it doing the best I can. I always put my job before you, before myself. And I can see that has had the worst impact on our family.
I'm sorry, but this is very sudden. Are you dying or something? I meant it as a joke. But as the words fell between us, my dad's face changed. His eyes dropped and his jaw ticked. Oh my God. What the fuck? Dad? I could barely speak.
I figured he would tell you. I thought it would be better coming from Martin than me.
The room began to spin. I sat down in the chair in front of me, farthest from my dad's seat at the head of the table. Kale knows? My father's cold, military expression was nowhere to be found.
Only recently. He likely hasn't had the chance to tell you, what with everything that's happened. I'm sure I was at the bottom of the priority list. I didn't have a damn clue what to say, or how to process what I was being told. I focused my attention on the centerpiece on the table. Fall-colored ornaments surrounded a woven cornucopia with little pumpkins. "What is it exactly?" I asked him as the silence got to be too much. "My liver is failing." "How? You're not even 50. My dad had gone to PT every morning for the last 20 years, so how could his health be failing? It didn't make sense.
"Well, illness doesn't seem to have any age limits, Karina. It sounds worse than it is. I'm not going to die right now. I don't know when, but there's still some time for me to get things right."
I almost laughed at how outrageous this was. He refused to call it what it was and was keeping the details to a minimum, but his eyes were full of vulnerability. The only time I had witnessed such an emotion from him. My father was sick, and now wanted to make amends with everyone around him. Mendoza was wounded, and couldn't use his body from the waist down. My brother may or may not be fine. Elodie's baby was coming in a few weeks. I was so overwhelmed, I wanted to scream. It felt like every time I turned around, something bad was happening to someone I cared about. My father and I had our issues, but I would never wish death on him. "Does Estelle know?" I thought about how much she had been taking care of me the last few days, and how overwhelmed she must be. My dad was essentially all she had.
"Yes. Your brother doesn't, and I don't think it would do any good to tell him right now,"
he confessed. I hated the idea of lying and deciding when the right time to share devastating news was, but my father was right in this case. "Why did you tell Cale before me?" I asked him, genuinely unsure how and when the two of them had even been around one another.
"I trust him with your life, Karina."
Trust. What an interesting choice of words for a man who proved again and again to be the opposite of trustworthy. It seemed everyone around him trusted him, except me. Did he blatantly lie to everyone else, too, or was I the special one? "Well, that's a mistake," I warned him, standing up to leave. I couldn't stay cooped up here any longer, moping around while the world continued to go on.
Chapter 29. Cale. I followed Fisher back to his room. As he shut the door behind us, he turned on his heel and faced me, shame clear on his exhausted face.
"It's a long story, but my mom has been around for a little bit now. She hasn't seen my sister yet," he explained quietly, his words coming out in a rush.
I immediately thought of how Karina thought she'd imagined her mom in the alley. Had it really been her, after all? "You've seen her?" I tried to make sense of the situation as a knock tapped at his door. He nodded and pulled the door to his assigned room open. A woman appearing no older than 30, but who had to be, sat on the bed with her hands in her lap. Her dark blonde hair was the color of sunflower petals covered by a shadow. She stood up and her long dress swept the floor as she greeted Fisher with open arms.
"My God, are you okay?"
Her face was shockingly similar to both of her children's, but especially Karina's. The shape of her eyes, the slightly wide bridge of her nose, her squared chin, they were nearly identical to Karina's. I could see now how much Fisher looked like his father compared to how much Karina looked like her mother. From all the stories I had heard about her, I felt like I had met this woman at least a dozen times. The beaded bracelets on her wrists clinked together as she cupped his face. Nothing about the way she had decorated herself or her embrace with her son made any sense to me.
"I'm okay,"
Fisher began to explain the short version of what had happened. I could barely follow his words because I was too busy staring at the ghost in the room. Even her reactions were exactly like Karina's, from the way she nodded slowly as she followed along with the story to the way her eyes went wide at the violent parts.
"This is Martin, by the way. He's the main reason I'm alive today. He's saved my ass more than a few times, and he's the one I told you about, who helped me enlist. Her attention turned to me.
So you're the famous Martin?
From what Karina had told me about her mother's emotional relationship with the army, I expected her to get angry with me or at least be cross. Instead, she smiled at me. The same smile I'd seen on her daughter's face a million times. The same heart-shaped face. The same thick, dark eyelashes. It made me uneasy as hell. According to Karina, her father was the only one who had a photo of her mom, so I'd never seen one and now wished I had, so I wouldn't have been so caught off guard. Genetics were strong, but this was uncanny. No wonder Karina's father couldn't help but compare the two of them. I realized I hadn't responded to her question. Fisher was watching me with an anxious smile. Yeah, that's me, I managed to say.
My boyfriend is in the army too, newly stationed here.
She perked up. I always considered myself to be an extremely grounded person, someone who could make anything make sense, but I was dumbfounded. Not only by the realization that Fisher had been in contact with this woman and his sister didn't have a clue, but that she had a boyfriend in the army and was acting like she hadn't left her family in the middle of the night. It was obvious that she didn't have a clue who I was or that I had a connection to Karina. It took every bit of my self-control not to be rude to her. In my head, I was screaming at her, telling her that she had some fucking nerve to just show up here like nothing had happened. I could feel my jaw ticking. It was so fucking hard to bite my tongue. Mom, Martin is also Karina's boyfriend, Fisher told her when my silence became awkward. He knew me well enough to know that it would be impossible for me to smile and simply ask her about her boyfriend or pretend that I didn't know how big of a deal this would be for Karina and should be for him. Her entire demeanor changed as she took in this information. She went from breezy and smiley to nervous and mildly defensive. She reminded me of a prisoner I had to babysit once in Afghanistan. The sudden change in behavior when held in captivity was a very specific human behavior. It said a lot about her that the mere mention of her daughter made her react this way.
Oh, Karina's dating a soldier?
Her words weren't what I had expected. I assumed she would ask where Karina was, what she was up to, how she was. I'm discharging, medical retirement, so technically only a soldier for another week or so, I explained. Fisher looked like he was going to vomit.
I'm surprised, honestly.
She stared at me, taking in the details of my face. She had a curious attention to detail gaze, just like her daughter. I was too. She always said she would never date a soldier, but these two are pretty serious. Like marriage serious, Fisher claimed.
Were we?
I guess we were. But I had a feeling Karina would not like her brother talking about our relationship without her being present.
Marriage, really? I can't imagine Karina married. Wow, she must be really infatuated with you.
My fist tightened at my waist, and I tried to ignore the burning feeling of wanting to speak for Karina and wipe that look off her mother's face. What does she know about her daughter? She had left when Karina was in high school and didn't have a clue who Karina was as a woman, and her blasé tone made it evident that she didn't feel nearly as guilty as she should. I couldn't help it. I had to react. And what do you imagine Karina to be exactly? The playfulness disappeared from her face. Her brows turned down and she glared at me. I hadn't expected her to be so hostile. From the image Karina had painted of her, she was fragile, lost and dreamy, desperate to be loved and have a purpose in the world. And maybe she was, but the woman in front of me was not.
I imagine her to be like you, harsh and cold, like her father.
Mom, Fisher tried to interject, but both of us ignored him. She couldn't be further from that. I defended Karina, entirely sure that she was wrong. Karina was nothing like her father. She didn't have a ruthless bone in her body. Their mother studied me further, looking for a hole to probe. I could practically read her mind now that the idea of who she was had evaporated. She shrugged and the butterflies on her chaotic dress looked like they were dancing.
I guess people change.
Are you planning on telling her you're back? I asked her. All pretenses were gone now. I may as well ask the most important question. She turned to Fisher as if looking to him for guidance. He was lost, unable to help her, but I could tell he would have done anything to make the room less tense. The machine in the corner beeped steadily as the seconds passed. It suddenly dawned on me that the person Fisher had been on the phone with was his mother, not a drug dealer. I didn't need to know how long the two of them had been in contact. It would only make it worse that he'd hidden it from Karina. She overlooked all his bad behavior, his addictions, his selfishness. But could she overlook this?
I do. I just need to get my grounding here first. I just moved back. Everything is going so well with my boyfriend, and I don't want to rock the boat by throwing in any variables.
Variables? What the fuck was this, a science lab? She was not equipped to be a mother and certainly didn't deserve Karina's empathy or sympathy. And her boyfriend? What kind of person puts something as trivial as a boyfriend before the child they'd abandoned? Nothing I could say would change her mind, and I didn't want to. If she didn't want to see her daughter, I wasn't going to force her. Karina deserved better than that. She was already a mess from Phillips's breakdown, and with her not being aware of her father's illness, it was too much. I'm going to go. I didn't want to spend another moment breathing the same air as this woman, and I wasn't in the business of cussing women out. Fisher nodded. His face told me that he had a lot to say but couldn't. I wanted to flip him off. That casual little fucker always stirred up a storm and walked away unscathed. He had somehow become the favorite, easier child, and it didn't make any damn sense to me. Given his current state, you know, being in the damn hospital because of a screwdriver being stabbed into his torso by his girlfriend's husband said it all. What a headline. I didn't turn back around as I left, disappointment and worry filling every crack in my armor. I couldn't shake the memory of Karina's mother's face as I drove to Karina's. She texted me that she was leaving her dad's and going home, so I wanted to meet her there. I called my ma, hoping to get some advice. She was enraged and confused by Karina's mother's return and behavior. She immediately advised me to tell Karina that I couldn't hide something like this from her. Well, I knew she was right. She always was. I couldn't imagine breaking Karina's heart while it was already in recovery. By the time I pulled up to her house, I felt sick. I could have just walked in and told Karina that her mother was at the hospital, and she could go see her right now. As many times as I played the scenario in my head, I couldn't bring myself to do it. I went back and forth as I walked up the nearly finished deck and heard Elodie's voice coming from inside. Okay, so it wasn't the time. I would have taken any excuse and was grateful for Elodie's presence. I knocked lightly on the door before stepping inside. Elodie had a small suitcase in one hand and a duffel bag over her other shoulder. Going somewhere? I asked her as she greeted me. She nodded.
I'm going to meet my parents at their hotel. They're staying for a little while.
That's good, I told her, realizing how uninterested I sounded. Not good, given the circumstances, but I'm glad you get to see them and be with them right now. She smiled, waving her hand.
I knew what you meant.
Sorry. I nervously brushed my hand over my chin. I'm a little out of it.
I think we all are.
She kissed my cheeks and yelled bye to Karina, who I assumed was in her bedroom. I moved with caution as if I was approaching a war zone. Little did I know I was. Her room was a disaster, clothes thrown everywhere in little piles that looked like visible landmines. She was standing by her dresser, tossing clothes over her head. Karina, I said her name slowly as I approached her. She didn't turn around. Had she found out about her mom's return on my way here? Her brother must have called her. I moved closer to her and put my hand on her shoulder. Are you okay? Why did you leave your dad's? Her eyes were bloodshot with lilac circles under them. Her lips were a deep pink, and I could see the blue veins in her forehead. She looked exhausted mentally and physically. She looked away, avoiding eye contact with me. I began to feel more than a little on edge.
I couldn't sit there anymore. I have to work tomorrow since Molly is leaving and my house is a mess.
It wasn't the time to point out that she was in the middle of covering her bedroom floor with clothing. On cue, she tossed a purple sweater over both of our heads. Do you need help cleaning? Both of us were on edge. I tightened my light grip on her shoulder and turned her around to face me. She opened her mouth, then closed it. I was about to blurt out that I just met her mother, but she lifted her hand up to cover my mouth.
I don't want to talk about it, or anything. I want to clean my house and have a normal day. I feel like I'm losing my mind, Kale, and I can't talk about anything that has happened in the last 72 hours. So please, I know you want to talk it out and have a therapy session, but can we just pretend like everything is fine and have a normal night as 21-year-olds? Please?
That was the last thing I wanted to do, but I couldn't imagine how overwhelmed she felt. I didn't blame her for wanting to ignore everything and pretend, but I knew that disassociating usually caused more pain in the long run, so it was difficult for me to agree to her plan. I did anyway, nodding in silence while my mind screamed at me to fix this for her, to take her pain away. It wasn't possible, and I knew that, but hated it all the same.
Thank you. I don't want to fight with you or talk about how I feel or what the future means. I want to be a 21-year-old girl manically going through my clothes and ignoring reality for a bit.
I sighed. Okay. Let's ignore reality for a bit. What exactly are you doing with these clothes? I looked around the room. How could one person have this many clothes?
Not sure, donating them. I need a fresh start, a new style. I wear the same clothes all the time, and I can't afford to buy new ones, so I want to get rid of at least half and restyle the rest. Oh, and I bought hair dye. Want to help me dye it?
She was speaking a mile a minute. My eyes found the box of hair dye on her dresser, and the pit in my stomach grew. I wished I had her ability to be so spontaneous, changing parts of my identity every time something was out of my control, but I wasn't programmed that way. I was a dweller, a hyperfixator. Sure, I agreed to her plan, and we spent the day organizing every inch of her house, dyeing her hair dark brown, and ordering Chinese takeout. As the hours passed, I began to settle, coming to the realization that maybe sometimes the answer to handling trauma was to temporarily shut it off. Processing it immediately didn't have to be the only response. Karina's sporadic yet meticulous way of thinking was contagious, but I knew deep down that the clock was ticking and Karina's bottled up emotions were going to explode without a warning.
Chapter 30. Karina. I found myself at my father's house by choice. What a complicated emotion regret is. I had gone from declaring that I was never going to see my father again to driving to his house after work. I hadn't called ahead, so I was relieved that his truck was parked in the driveway and the interior lights of the house were on. It was so hard to make sense of what I was feeling when it came to every aspect of my life. Everything had changed so rapidly, and I couldn't get a grip on it. Before I could mentally spiral any longer, I got out of my car and walked up the sidewalk and onto the porch. Estelle was the one who answered the door. She was dressed casually, in dark jeans and a white scoop neck top. Her hair was down like she had let the air dry it, which surprised me, but it looked effortless and pretty on her. I wanted to tell her that, but my father's voice sounded out between us.
"Who is it?"
he asked, clearly in a bad mood. The tone of his voice sent me straight back to my childhood. It had been an awful idea to come here. What the hell was I thinking? "Karina," Estelle and I responded in unison.
"Oh."
He stood next to Estelle and looked me up and down, taking in my work clothes. I felt underdressed and suddenly insecure. I hated that one look from him could do that to me, no matter how old I was. "What's wrong?" he asked me, softening the smallest of bits. Shaking my head, I held my hand up. Nothing's wrong. I don't know. I wanted to come over. I should have called or something before, but You can always come here. No need to call ahead, Estelle said. The look she gave my father felt like she was coaching him or reminding him, like she was forcing him to agree with her.
I didn't say you couldn't come here. I assumed something was wrong because you never just come here out of the blue, he said.
What the heck was my plan now? To sit in the living room and watch TV with him and Estelle? To ask about the weather, his health? My head ached at my own stupid, spontaneous choice to come here. Have you eaten dinner? Estelle asked as she closed the front door behind me. No, actually. I hadn't eaten since the morning when Cale handed me a piece of toast as I left for work. I'd overslept, my body tired from organizing and rearranging every inch of my house all night. Why don't we order some pizza? She suggested, looking at my dad, who would never in a million years turn down pizza.
Not Domino's, he said, as always.
It had been years since I'd thought about his boycott of Domino's, and it made me laugh a little that he was still holding strong to such a petty thing. When I was in middle school, I won a certificate for a free pizza for reading the most in my class over winter break, and when my parents took me to get my prize, they wouldn't accept the coupon. My father argued with the manager for nearly an hour while my mother doodled all over their wooden table with a hairpin, carving thin swirls into the wood. I sat quietly, no longer wanting the pizza at all, but wasn't used to my father fighting for me over anything, so gladly sat there waiting for a resolution. We left with no pizza and went straight to Pizza Hut, and my dad vowed to never eat Domino's again in his life, which he'd apparently kept up with. I know, honey. Estelle smiled, making me wonder if he had told her the story. If we'd had a normal relationship, I would ask her or tell her about it. But we didn't, so I relived the memory myself as we moved to sit down in the living room. Estelle called Pizza Hut herself, which felt nostalgic. No one called places to order food anymore. Apps and laptops and iPads were the way now, but I kind of liked that she called, even though it took forever for such a simple order. While we waited, I could tell my dad was uneasy, not sure what to do with me. This was different than the forced family dinners. I'd come here of my own free will. He kept glancing at me, then at the football game on the TV, then back to me. Once the pizza arrived, I stood up from the couch to go to the dining room.
Let's eat in here. I'll grab some plates, my father suggested.
I'm sure to most people it wouldn't be out of the ordinary, but I had never seen my dad or Estelle eat in any room of the house other than their dining room. The casual pizza, to eating in the living room, to my dad being the one to offer to get the plates. Was he worse off health-wise than he was acting? It sure as hell seemed like it.
I hear Mendoza's been healing better than expected,
my dad said when we were done eating. Yeah, thank God, I agreed, wondering if my father even cared about Mendoza or any of the soldiers under him, or if he was just making conversation with me.
Karina.
The tone of his voice sounded a bit like he was choking.
When I got that call, hearing that you and your brother were in danger.
He paused.
I understand that you don't see me as a protector, and barely as a father, but it was the scariest moment of my life. I never wanted you to be affected by this part of military life, and I always expected you to stay away from it the best you could, like your mother.
Dad. I was just as fumbly and speechless as he was. We had never had a conversation like this before, and I thought I even saw a gloss of tears in his eyes as he found his next words.
I will do everything in my power to make sure Phillips is off the streets and locked away somewhere. He won't be coming near you or Elodie again. And if he would have succeeded in killing my son or my daughter, I would have ended his life myself.
The intensity of my father's words and the way his mouth twisted was overwhelming, but felt good. A relief that he actually gave a shit about us. Or maybe I was being naive. I didn't know. but it felt better than nothing, which was what I'd expected. How are you feeling, Karina? You must have been so scared, Estelle asked me, holding a paper towel in her hands, tearing at the edges with her eggplant-hued painted nails. Thanks again for taking care of me after it happened, I told Estelle. I'm okay, I think. Yeah, I'm okay. My response was jumbled, but it was how I felt. Her eyes widened in concern. If you need to talk to anyone, I have some friends who work in mental health, all across the spectrum, so don't hesitate to ask. Friends? I blurted. It was absolutely meant to be an inside thought. Her laughter surprised me. Yes, I know it's hard to imagine, but I do have friends. Not many, but I do have some. Her lighthearted response to my insult made me feel a little better. I was genuinely surprised at the idea of her with friends, or with anyone who wasn't my father. From my perspective, it seemed like her life began and ended at the front door of this house, but I was glad to know that wasn't true. Thank you for the offer. I'm still processing what happened, but thank you.
I'll make sure Mendoza and his family are taken care of, my dad added. He saved your brother's life.
I felt a little sick, the memory still fresh in my mind. It played through like a film on an IMAX screen. Gloria's screams and the blood soaking the floor, everyone scattering, Kale. I'm going to get some air, I said as my chest heaved. Without looking at my dad and Estelle, I stood up, the room slightly blurry, like the lines of everything were fuzzy around the edges. When I stepped outside, the air was chilly, bringing a little more awareness to my mind. I sat on the swing, lifting my feet, waiting for my body to come down from fight or flight. I pulled my phone out to call Kale. His voice would calm me. The swing moved slowly as his soothing voice came through the line. I hadn't forgotten about him knowing about my father's situation, but right now, none of that mattered.
Hey, you okay?
He immediately asked. Yeah, I think so. I'm at my dad's and he started talking like an actual dad. Estelle was offering me her therapist friends. It was a lot. I needed some air. I came out to the porch swing and just wanted to hear your voice.
I agree with Estelle, he told me.
Are you being sarcastic? I kicked my feet up. I had left my shoes inside by the door, and my socks had little penguins on them. I wiggled my toes, pretending to be a girl on the phone with her boyfriend. No life-changing events happening around her. No near-death experiences.
A little, but I do think she's right that you should talk to someone. What happened isn't something you should brush off or ignore. I know you want to show yourself that you're strong. But sometimes strength lies in admitting when you need a little more than yourself to lean on.
I've been to therapists many, many times about my childhood and my mom, and honestly, I'm not sure that it... I blinked at a movement in the yard. I was positive I was losing my mind. That Estelle and Kale were both right. Or had I fallen asleep at some point and was dreaming? The woman walked toward me, her eyes set straight on me. I wiped my eyes with my hands, sure as hell that it wasn't possible that I was seeing what I thought I was.